community activist Mika Gadsden. Law professor Ms. Gammons, I believe, will be joining us a little bit late. Public servant Clay Middleton. Councilmember Peter Shahan. And Mayor John Tegelberg. Now I'd like to introduce tonight's moderator, Christian Singer. Christian is the founder and editor of Holy City Center, Charleston's most popular blog, news aggregator resource, and hub for day-to-day activities in Charleston. Thank you for being here tonight, Christian. So let's begin.
All right, thank you all so much for being here, and thanks to the Historic Charleston Foundation for inviting me here to host. What am I missing?
Lights.
Oh, the lights, okay.
We got them down.
Well, mood lighting.
We'll hopefully get that straightened out. In any event, thank you so much for being here. I'm honored to be here to moderate the panel today. First, I'll go over some of the rules just so that everyone's aware. The candidates were made aware of this prior, but just so you all know as well. So this is a forum, not a candidate debate. Candidates will be asked the same questions in a randomly generated order. If you're wondering, we did it through random.org. Candidates will have 90 seconds to respond to each question, and there will be 6 questions in total. Candidates will be asked a 1-minute follow-up question at random, and each candidate will only receive 1 follow-up question. Our official timekeeper is Natalie Miller. She is located in the front row. She will give candidates a 30-second warning, followed by a stop. Natalie, wherever you are, can you wave right there? And at the conclusion, candidates will be given 2 minutes to make a closing statement where they can say whatever they like during that time period. For our audience, I also, we mentioned it before, but I ask you to refrain from any cheering, applause, or any other audible responses. We appreciate your cooperation. Before I dive in, real quick, again, thank you for letting me host this. Or moderate this, rather. For those who don't know, Holy City Center is just a website. It's all about Charleston, fun things going on in town. I heard some people like, what is that? So for those who don't know, that's what it is. Please check it out after. And what you're all here for now, the actual candidate forum. So we're going to do this with the 6 questions. Each candidate's going to have 90 seconds to respond, and then a 60-second follow-up for that one specific question I mentioned before. And then the closing statements will be 2 minutes. Those will also be in random order, so I'll be calling out candidates' names. All right, so that'll do it for the intro, so we'll get going with the first question. I also am multitasking. Go. Many argue that developers are not paying their fair share and need to be contributing more to infrastructure improvements, the public realm, and livability in Charleston. Others counter that more fees just make development more expensive and results in more value engineering and less affordability. What are your thoughts on this, and what will your approach be to assessing the appropriateness of development proposals? Ms. Gammons was supposed to go first. We'll move her to the end if she comes in during this question. So Ms. Gadsden, you are up first.
Okay, can everyone hear me well?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Good evening. For me, as an organizer, the bulk of my work recently consists of advocating for the folks on the west side. I'm a co-chair with the Friends of Gadsden Creek, and while that has an environmentalist core goal, we also care for the community there. And so through our research, we found that development has had a relationship with the West Side, with the residents, lower and working class residents, that has been adversarial. Practices like paying fees in lieu of taxes have really set that community back, and I suspect some other areas of Charleston as well. As mayor, I think we need to do away with FILAT. I think also, more than just getting rid of the fees, holding development to accountable is important. Look, developers are not a monolith. They are not. They're not all evil and maniacal, right? We can woo small-scale developers to Charleston to take on small-scale development projects to create more truly affordable housing. These are not going to be our only way to get there. We have to find alternative ways to get there. But these, the loophole has been exploited. It's not leading to more affordable housing options. So I do believe that we should do away with that, hold development accountable, but pursue small-scale developers to help us create more affordable housing options.
Thank you. Next up is Councilman Shade.
Thank you, sir. So thank you. The issue is always going to be a balancing act with this. The initial reaction is going to be, yes, let's pass the expenses off to the developer. And we know what's going to happen. If the developer is taxed with these fees and costs, the developer is going to pass that on to the ultimate user. And that's going to drive up the cost of that unit or that housing complex, and the person who's trying to buy that is going to be tagged with that expense. So it's going to get pared down to the ultimate user sooner or later. So it's always going to be a question of balance. Yes, so the developer should be tagged with a certain portion of that, but not overtaxing that so that it is going to then be passed down to the ultimate user. What's going to happen, though, however, is once that property is developed, we know this is going to happen. The property value is going to go up. And the property value goes up, then real property taxes come into the coffers of the city. And once we get more tax dollars into the city, that goes into the general fund that then helps to offset the expense of those impacts that it has on that property being developed. And one thing we need to take in consideration as well, that commercial property has a bigger bang for the buck as opposed to residential property, because with commercial property, they're going to be taxed at a 6% rate as opposed to a 4% tax rate. So we're getting more money into the coffers with that rate. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Mayor Tecklenburg, you are up next.
Well, thank you. We all relish the livability of the public realm and the beauty of the public realm of Charleston. So every development that comes along, my eye always goes to the property around the development. What can we add to the public realm, and what would be reasonable for this development that help pay for? I'll give you a couple examples. One is the Cooper Hotel down there at the old Port Authority office site. When they bought the property and they came to talk to us, I mean, the waterfront park is right next door. And I was like, let's see if we can extend Joe Riley Waterfront Park around the front of this development and extend the public realm and access to the water. The same with Morrison Yard over there in Morrison Yard, although we all disagree with the BAR and what they approved with the way the building looks, right? But, or most of us, they agreed to procure another piece of property that's going to create this little finger park walkway down to the water's edge on the marsh. That's just an example. As far as fees, we don't add fees. In fact, we remove fees from affordable housing bona fide projects, but we're looking to add fees whenever else we can for other developments. We've added an affordable housing fee for hotels. We've added a mixed use fee.
Thank you, Mayor. Since we're halfway through the question, and since Ms. Gammons is here, I will reread the question, and then we'll keep going back in order. Mr. Coxwell, you'll be next. Many argue that developers are not paying their fair share and need to be contributing more to infrastructure improvements, the public realm, and livability in Charleston. Others counter that more fees just make development more expensive and results in more value engineering and less affordability. What are your thoughts on this, and what will your approach be to assessing the appropriateness of development proposals? Mr. Cogswell.
Yeah, thank you. Absolutely, I think developers should and can pay their fair share. What I would say is that what we are doing right now clearly is not working. The past 8 years, we have seen a lot of development that's not of character with the city of Charleston. It's not in scale. It doesn't really fit the DNA that we all know and love about our city. And so I think first and foremost, that needs to change. And the way that changes is with vision, leadership, and being proactive, particularly with larger projects, because you're not seeing any guidance coming from City Hall. You're not seeing leadership on that front. And it shows. It shows in the architecture. It shows in the quality of development. And again, ladies and gentlemen, this is a world that I know pretty well. I know that makes some people nervous that I'm in the development business. I appreciate the shout out from Deborah that we're not all the devil. I'm sorry, Mika. Deborah just came in. Sorry, I'm distracted. But in any event, you need to understand it, because what's happening right now, folks, is that the private sector is running circles around the public sector. And that is what you see in our city, and we need to change that. We need to have a lot more control. And the way you can do that is by focusing on, for example, development that would occur in TIF districts, like the two that have been set up in West Ashley that have been basically neglected for 7 years. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Mr. Middleton, you are up.
So we do not have to say yes to every development. And the approach that I would take if the good people of Charleston elect me as this next mayor would have community benefit ordinances and agreements, so that when a development is proposed, that we ask some questions on the front end, not hoping and wishing and praying that they do right on the back end. I do believe it's very important, especially when we think about the effects it would have on community, whether that be in housing, in transportation, affordability. Again, you can have some unintended consequences of a development, but let's discuss that now. Certain developments have taken place throughout the city of Charleston that has caused further gentrification, and we did not plan for life after gentrification. So how do we take a look at having a state-put initiative that would prevent our seniors or those on a fixed income from being displaced? How can we also take a look at opportunities to connect things like the environment and job opportunities into all of the developments, so that those that live in the impacted areas actually reap the benefit of it on the front end, not hoping and wishing on the back end. So the true impact of a community is needed, and I think those are some of the things that I would do as mayor of the city of Charleston. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Gammons, it's your turn.
Good evening. It's so good to see everyone here. Yes, developers need to share in that cost of developing here, and in a way they can do it, and what I would emphasize as mayor and working with you to make sure that happens, is that they share in the expenses of road repairs, sidewalk repairs, that they also preserve our natural environment. We live here because of that natural environment. We're going to talk about water later, but that access to our rivers, our marshes, and our creeks, those are so important, our trees are so important. So they, meaning developers, need to share in that, maintaining that. If they are building over something, there should never be building over any marshes or any creeks. We have to agree to that, and I will ensure that as mayor. And then also, in order to do that, we need a clear, comprehensive plan that involves all areas of the city of Charleston. And I will work with everyone, neighborhood associations, those who are not involved in neighborhood associations, to come up with that clear, comprehensive plan that involves development. And the development should never, never put on the bottom or second those people who are residents. Preserving our historical homes and our buildings is super important, and I will work for that. Zoning ordinances, changes, and amendments to those.
All right, thank you. The follow-up question for this round is for Mr. Middleton. Many residents lament that Charleston's culture is being lost as Charleston gentrifies and has become an investment destination for developers and an attractive place to relocate. As mayor, how would you address gentrification to keep legacy families in their neighborhoods and make it possible for the children to call those same neighborhoods home?
Yeah, this goes back to having the right accountability. Like, we ought to work with developers that want to do well and do good at the same time and have community interest at first. That's important. My mother, and who's here, my grandmother who's here, they have been gentrified from the city of Charleston. Fact, not opinion. So when you think about a state put initiative, that development, when I moved to Rosemont and bought my first home, and there was going to be development to take place there, a state put initiative was floated as a way to pay for any increase in property taxes for those that live there, meaning seniors on a fixed income or anyone on a fixed income, but in particular seniors. We also need to look at having the first right of refusal ordinance, so that if you are renting and you are in that home, the owner has to offer that to you first. And maybe now you're ready to buy, or maybe stop.
Thank you. All right, we'll move on to question number two. Tourism has recovered beyond expectations from the pandemic. 2022 was a record-breaking year for tourism in Charleston, and just about every month there's an article in the Post and Courier citing a new record number of passengers at our airport. No doubt, tourism plays an important role in our economy, but it also has impacts on residents' quality of life, particularly for the lower part of the peninsula. Do our tourism management policies focus enough on livability for city residents? What will your approach to tourism management be if elected? And we have Council Member Shade up first.
There's no question that tourism has a huge economic impact on our community. The number of tourists have rebounded significantly since the COVID pandemic. The numbers of 12 billion, 8 billion tourists, and the collateral benefit to other workers and income coming into the Tri-County area, the city in particular. So we do want tourists. We want to keep the welcome mat out for tourists, but we want to balance that because the overflow of tourists has an important negative impact on our livability. And if you live downtown, if you live on the peninsula, you feel that on a regular basis. So you want to make sure while we have a welcome mat out, we also want to make sure that tourists are staying within the confines of the zone of the laws that we have on the books to date, which is to make sure that we're not over bringing tourists into the community. One of the things that I would do to manage tourism better is to split the department that we have in existence of livability and tourism apart and create just a division or department dealing with tourism alone to make sure that our ordinances are being enforced effectively and fairly and across the board around the table, and to make sure that we're managing the tourism through the existing laws and increase the staff numbers that we have. I know we're fully staffed at this present time, but make sure we have enough of those officers out there enforcing those laws. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Mr. Middleton. It is your turn.
Residents and tourists could coexist. And right now you have a tourism management plan that's dated 2015. There have been some updates to it, but that's the latest and the greatest that we have. So I think it's important that we update that, especially the section of it that calls for quality of life. On the other side of that, that's the goal in terms of to focus on livability for residents, for our citizens first. But again, I do think that we do not have the right accountability. Our city is growing. More people are coming here. Do we have the right staff in place? Are we engaging with neighborhoods? Are we engaging with the residents as it relates to what problems are you having day to day? So that means we have to rethink, reimagine, reshuffle how we truly engage in that department so we can be responsive to individual complaints, so we prevent bad things from happening, people doing illegal tours and going to people's homes because they think it's a destination. I think for Charleston, we need to make sure that our city does not become a destination, that it is home, and we have to be respectful of that and making sure that that department and those that are walking day in and day out, regardless of the weather, that they are being responsive to the needs of individuals. That communication goes both ways, and as mayor of the city of Charleston, I would do that.
Thank you. Ms. Gadsden, you are up.
It's probably well documented, my feelings on tourism, but I think some folks have a misunderstanding as to what my feelings are about tourism. I love this city. I chose to live here as an adult because of the rich stories that are being told here. Sometimes we don't tell enough of the stories from enough perspectives. And why that is pertinent to the question is because I'd like to see us balance our tourism in a way that we're telling more stories and not just in one centralized location. We are seeing about 7 million visitors annually during our peak visitors or tourism season. Love to see some of that volume in other areas so that folks on the peninsula specifically don't bear the brunt of that burden. And that involves also making sure that we update and offer more mobility options in public transit. Mm-hmm. I'd also like to see our tourism industries work for us. I'm a renter, I'm a working class candidate. 44% of occupied housing in Charleston are renters. That's your workforce for tourism. We need to make sure that we're aggressive. The next leader of Charleston needs to be enthusiastic about making sure that the new changes to the accommodations tax actually works for Charlestonians. So that means that we have more discretion over where that money goes, and that can go toward affordable housing. We need to also demand more transparency with our taxpayer dollars with regard to tourism. And I think that's something that a lot of communities have been clamoring for quite some time now. So I'd like to see tourism work for the working class more.
All right, thank you. Mayor Tecklenburg, it is your turn.
So, as noted, tourism is an important leg of our economic stool. I think there's 51,000 hospitality jobs in the Lowcountry, so it is important. Let y'all know, actually, our visitor count was down a little bit last year, but our economic impact was up. So what we're trying to do is maximize the economic benefit. It's about quality and not quantity. We don't want as many visitors as they have in Myrtle Beach, but we do want them, when they leave here, to have a good impression of Charleston, and that's why we keep making these number one rankings in the magazines, because people actually enjoy coming here, and they're seeing good hospitality and a good time while they're here. So there's always this balancing act, y'all. We were the first city to have a tourism management plan. We constantly review that. We are fully staffed now with our tourism officers. Last year, thanks to the Historic Charleston Foundation, we had a review of our current tourism management practices right in this room. I do believe it's time to have a major citizen engagement about the tourism plan, because the last major update was in 2015. So I think every 10 years it's reasonable to do that. We could start that next year and have kind of a full-blown review of the tourism management plan. And any changes that need to be done, we could do that in the meantime.
Thank you, Mayor. Next up is Ms. Gammons.
Tourists, and remember when Joe Riley was mayor, he said they're visitors. So changing that name, that concept. They are part of Charleston, yet they should not be first before our residents. And so as mayor, I will make sure that residents come first, and then tourists or visitors, that they are allowed this access to our beautiful city. And so in doing that, the visitors, the tourists need to share in the cost. When they come here, they use our water, they use our sewer system, they use our roads, so they need to share in that cost. So as mayor, I will develop and work with different agencies, our state legislators, even federal government, to find a way for them to pay for their stay here. And also when it comes to moving around, adding more bike lanes is super important. Having a place where people can park and then take a shuttle or a bike into the different areas of the city, working with neighborhood associations, working with the tourism associations is super important. And then making sure that we pay attention to what you're saying. The mayor works for you. As your mayor, I will work for you and I will listen to you to find out what works best in inviting people here to see what we have. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Cogswell, you are up.
Yeah, thank you. So I think we all know for 50 years, probably more than that, the main economic development initiative in the city of Charleston and really the region was to bring more people here. And I think we can all agree that mission accomplished, right? We have 7-8 million people visiting a city of less than 200,000 and an MSA of less than 1 million people. And I agree with the mayor that we need to make sure that we are focusing on quality, not quantity. I think we probably should have made that call at about 2 or 3 million visitors, but here we are. So where I am on it is, I think tourism is an important part of our industry. I do think we can coexist. I was a tour guide for every summer in college. I think the people that come here, there's a reason why we're the number one city. But the reality of it is we need to diversify our economy into other sectors. And in terms of what the tourism industry can do for us, I do think that, you know, we should look to the food and beverage industry and the hospitality industry to give back a little bit more. And that's not just, financially, but how hard is it to get a reservation for anyone in this room? I mean, it's damn near impossible. And cities like New Orleans often take care of their people that live there because they're their biggest ambassadors and they're their biggest salespeople. So that's an idea that I have that I think that the mayor can do.
All right, thank you all. The follow-up question for this round is for Councilman Shade. Would you support the development of a new and resident-focused tourism management plan, especially since the city sees more than 2 million visitors since the last plan was done in 2015?
You just want to say yes and no without response?
Sure.
Certainly, I think that, and you've heard, I'm sorry, use the microphone, don't I? Apologize.
So the simple answer to that question is yes. I would certainly want to make sure that we have an updated tourism management plan. And I think that as part of that conversation, I would want to invite a diverse group of folks on to that table to offer their input and suggestions. And you've heard a lot of good suggestions from this table tonight about that, and I would incorporate along with that idea. But you need to have a diverse crowd of folks. You need it from the industry, you need it from people who live downtown, you need the people who live West Ashley and other parts of the community, because you need the input of folks who see this from a different lens, just from a narrow section of folks. Because it is an important part of our economy, this is an important part of our livability issue, and the only way you're going to get to the balanced part of all of this is to have divergent ideas at that table.
All right, thank you. Our next question. Our city faces severe challenges due to flooding and sea level rise. Water negatively impacts our economy, mobility, access to healthcare, and education, as well as our property. Consequently, the next mayor is going to have to make some tough decisions regarding development in areas with high flood risk and how we allocate limited resources for flood mitigation. We've heard the seawall discussed ad nauseum at prior forums. That project aside, what are your specific infrastructure recommendations to address flooding, and what policy recommendations do you have regarding our building and development practices? We're going to start with Ms. Gast.
Yes, as I mentioned earlier, I'm a co-chair with an environmentalist group called the Friends of Gaston Creek. And one thing I love about working with that group is that it doesn't consist of just loudmouth gadflies like myself. We actually are in community with engineers, hydrologists, scientists, educators, people you know, people you revere and you admire. One of those people is a friend of mine, Joshua Robinson, of Robinson Design Engineers. He wrote an op-ed a while back that was published in the Post and Courier. And he was opposed to the seawall, and that really helped me make my decision. I agree with Joshua. I think the seawall is not the direction we need to head in, primarily because it is an older approach that just doesn't work and doesn't meet the moment. We're facing an existential crisis, which is the climate change crisis, and that requires us to be innovative in our solutions. So that means incorporating green infrastructure. I'd love to see Charleston spearhead projects like the Billion Oyster Project, right? Where you create certain types of protection based on the use of oysters, things that get regenerative over time, get better over time. They help slow sea level rise, and they also help with erosion. I'd like to also see us stop building in flood-prone areas. I'd like to see us reinvest in our rain garden program so you can get a grant to turn your yard into a rain garden to help with the absorption of storm water. I'd like to see us also not fill the Gaston Creek and revitalize that area so that it can perform a drainage feature.
All right, thank you. Next up is Councilman Shade.
Thank you. So when I got elected to city council, I was assigned to the Public Works and Utilities Department and realized immediately that that department was covering too many tasks. The Public Works Utilities was addressing issues dealing with sidewalks, garbage pickup, rodent control, and fleet management. And I introduced, and we got adopted immediately, an ordinance that addressed and created a stormwater department. That stormwater department has one mission, to address these flooding issues. So out of that department, you will see the increase in the attention that's being placed on stormwater management projects. That's a critical thing that's happened to the city over the past 7 or 8 years. In my district alone, we have increased the number of projects dealing with stormwater projects that may impact a smaller geographical area, and has a huge impact on that property owner's livability. It's keeping that flood water out, keeping that those waters out. We have over 200 other projects that needed immediate attention throughout West Ashley and on particular James Island. So our resources are limited, our options are limited, but we need to be paying a whole lot of attention to these smaller projects throughout the area, and in addition to the Church Creek Basin and to Calhoun West projects first. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Tecklenburg, it is your turn.
So first on the policy front, I think most of y'all know we're rewriting our zoning code to be reflective of our comprehensive plan change. We'll be one of the first cities in America that bases zoning on elevation. We'll be reducing density in low-lying areas. So that's the policy side of it. I wish I could have an hour to talk about our projects we're working on. There are many. On the peninsula, one of my favorites is cleaning out the old archway tunnels. We've started on the one that comes from Limehouse Street all the way up Cummings Street to College of Charleston. There's about 9 miles of archway tunnels on the peninsula that can be cleaned out, fortified, and maximized for both storage and conveyance. Speaking of the Corps of Engineers, I won't talk about the seawall since you asked me not to, but working with them is the way, y'all, to get federal dollars to help pay for flooding projects in the Lowcountry. So in addition to the seawall, we've started an additional effort with them to study projects for tidal and inland, that's for stormwater. Okay, east side, we got a project plan there, funded, by the way, you got to think about how you're going to pay for all these things, funded by our Cooper River Bridge TIF district. On the west side, funded by our West End, we just passed a bond for that. On West Ashley, Windermere project, it's underway, it's being planned right now. We just got approved another $2 million for it tonight. Before I could go on and on, I got to stop.
Thank you. Ms. Gammons, you are up.
First, water is good. Too much water is not good. So water, we rely on water, we need water. And when it comes to flooding, and particularly in the peninsula, there is flooding all over the Lowcountry. But one, cleaning drains on a regular basis. Two, cleaning our streets on a regular basis is necessary. Raising the level of streets in these flood-prone areas, again, with engineers and having those studies done, looking at what has been done in other jurisdictions, and removing concrete from these unused lots. We need to take a survey, and as mayor, I will take a survey of dilapidated buildings, unused lots, and pay attention to that, because we have the constitutional power to purchase these lots and use it for the public good. And also having open retention ponds and this living shoreline that was mentioned earlier is necessary. As far as policies with development and with building, making sure that we agree and the city says you cannot fill in any more creeks, cannot fill in any more marshes, any low-lying areas, you cannot pave that over. Second thing to do is to remove these impervious surfaces. We need to let the water come down when it comes to from the clouds, or coming up from the river. And then planting more trees, working with all levels of the government agencies in order to maintain that.
All right, thank you. Representative Coxwell, you are up now.
Yeah, I've been pretty consistent on this, because I do believe absolutely that we do face an existential threat with sea level rise. And for that, I'm all about less talk, more action. Right now, we have 5 studies listed on the city's website, very detailed studies across the city that address flooding. We are currently contemplating or in the process of doing a more holistic water management plan. And now we are also looking at not only the seawall study, or PED, but also another Army Corps of Engineers study that would be for the entire region or city-wide that would deal with flooding. So again, that's 8 studies. I feel like there could be some consolidation there because I think time is of the essence. I think I appreciate the fact that you need to do studies to get federal funding, but we also need to get our share of the funding, and we need to get organized on how and where we're going to get that, folks, because it's going to be hundreds of millions of dollars to address our needs. Hundreds of millions of dollars, and we don't have it in the city's budget. So we've got to start working with the county and the state legislature and looking for grants in order to make sure that this threat is addressed. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Middleton, you are up.
As mayor of the city of Charleston, I would create a city infrastructure coordinator. This person would be proactive in applying for federal resources under bipartisan infrastructure law. There are 25 competitive grants within that just for cities, not a pass-through from the state. Part of that includes flood mitigation projects that we could fund. It would complete projects and jumpstart projects as well. That infrastructure coordinator would also be proactive in applying for resources from the Inflation Reduction Act. Those resources sunset in fiscal year 2026, so time is ticking. Would also apply for the $1.8 billion that FEMA announced last week that the funding ends, excuse me, the application ends the end of February. Being able to apply for those resources is right there, but we have to be proactive in doing that. Now, as it relates to the policy, net zero construction goals, decarbonize public buildings, explore green bonds, I got you, and then we'll also do a whole of community approach in order to reduce carbon emissions. We would produce a getting to zero toolkit for residents and businesses, retrofit Charleston, plant or save 2,500 trees annually, and we would also work with establish a green infrastructure portfolio standard in all development throughout the city of Charleston.
All right, thank you. All right, the follow-up for this round is for Representative Coxwell. You've previously talked a lot about flooding solutions and have been critical of the proposed Army Corps project, instead favoring extending the battery. How can the city afford to do that on its own, and why would you not want to cost share those construction costs with the federal government?
Quite simply, I think you can do both. I mean, you have 2 core studies, and this requires getting in the weeds, and I'm going to take a little bit more in a minute, I guess, but the reality of it is both studies allow for federal funding. One study is specifically for storm surge, and that is the wall that only protects the peninsula, and I think we'll have an extremely difficult time getting passed by city council, because who's going to vote for the rest of the city, from the rest of the city, to protect just the peninsula and spend $300 million of city money that they don't have? Whereas you can do the core study that is more incorporating all of the sea level rise needs and probably incorporate an elevated edge. It won't be able to stand a 15-foot storm surge, but it will definitely help and help solve daytime flooding. So again, I think you can consolidate a lot of these efforts into one, get organized about it, figure out your sources and uses. Otherwise, I think you're going to have a lot of distractions. Thank you.
All right, thank you. We'll move on to question number 4. Plans for the redevelopment of Union Pier Terminal were paused this summer to allow time for a community-driven visioning process. Some residents have criticized the city for not taking a more proactive role, as the initial plans for Union Pier were taking shape and zoning applications were being developed. What is your take on this? What do you believe is the role for the city and City Hall specifically in large projects like this? Representative Coxwell, you are first.
I was always going to last. I think Union Pier was a mess. I really do. I think it is an incredible opportunity. I think that I know that the city has known that it was coming for quite some time. It wasn't incorporated in the last city's master plan. And as a result, it was a blank slate for the South Carolina Ports Authority and low. It's developer. And so what did they do? It was the tail wagging the dog. They were trying to get to a number. They designed something that they called Charleston. And you and I know that it had nothing to do with Charleston. Didn't look like Charleston, didn't feel like Charleston. And they can put as many watercolors in front of you as you want, but it wasn't Charleston, right? So it's a great opportunity. It is going to be a complicated plan, but I think the idea of basically an extension of Ansonborough in that neighborhood, that is what Charleston wants. That would be a character-enhancing development, adding more green space. It can be done. It will be complicated. But bottom line, folks, is that the financial needs of the South Carolina Ports Authority should be borne by the entire state, not the residents of Charleston. Thank you.
All right, thank you. We'll move to the other end of the table. Mayor Tecklenburg, you are up.
So on Union Pier, I said early on at the start that it was what was proposed was too tall, too dense, too many hotel rooms, and not enough affordable housing. And by the way, just to explain to everyone, since the days of Mayor Riley back in the 90s, when the city first encouraged the Port Authority to redevelop the property, in the comprehensive plan of the city, it was dubbed urban core, which means the most dense development possible in the city. And when we did our comprehensive plan review just a couple of years ago, Councilmember Seekings and I realized that this was not headed to a good place if we left that urban core designation in the comprehensive plan. And y'all, that's why we removed it. So the Port Authority didn't care. They came forward with their plan. They're a private property owner. We had to accept their application and start processing on it. We started negotiating with them. But it became crystal clear when many of y'all, along with myself, were at that Planning Commission public hearing. And I called Barbara the next day. I said, Barbara, you're not going to get my vote. I don't think you're going to get the support of City Council. You need to start all over again. And that's what led to us working now with the Riley Center over at the College of Charleston. We've got all the groups that were engaged, part of the...
All right, thank you. Mr. Middleton, you are up.
If it were not for the... this organization and the Historic Society and the Coastal Conservation League, there would have been no real movement. Or in fact, not opinion. The city did not include Union Pier in its comprehensive plan in 2020. As soon as the Port Authority said, hey, we're really going to develop this thing, I would have immediately had a task force in place in order to focus on those issues regarding Union Pier. You woke up, you went to bed, you ate, you slept, you breathed Union Pier. 70 acres, the most pristine, valuable piece of waterfront property on the East Coast. We cannot delegate that to someone in staff that's already overworked and do not have the autonomy. So the thing that we did on the back end, we should have been doing as soon as they said, hey, we're going to really develop this. So we got to get the PUD right. I went to every single public forum that was in person or online for 8 months, and I learned something new every single time. There's no way this was going to be done in the timeline allotted. No way at all. It took the Charleston Place 9 years. You think we were going to do 70 acres in a year? Impossible. So other things that I would do as mayor of the city of Charleston, we got to get the PUD right. It wasn't in the comprehensive plan, and I think it's in a better position now because we'll include more organizations, people that do not always agree with us, that will yield a better product. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Next up, Ms. Gammons.
As mayor, I will represent you. I will be your voice. It's so important that the city represents the people. And going to the people, having the people come, inviting them to the table and listening, and that's what I will do as mayor. And getting the input from residents is super important. We are mindful and need to continue to be mindful of what has happened to our city, the gentrification, the displacement of longtime residents of black and brown people who are no longer here. So in that mindfulness, making sure that we have a clear vision, we have access to the river, we have access to that water where people can relax, where they can fish, where they can shrimp, where they can read and just be a part of that. Having access to that water is super important. And then affordable housing, making sure that that's a part of whatever that development is, workforce housing, affordable housing, height restrictions on that area. I talked about that earlier, about having a plan, a comprehensive plan. So that will involve Union Pier. And then these bike lanes, I talked about that earlier, building these bike lanes so that we have less traffic on our streets. It's super important that we incorporate that area with all of the city of Charleston.
Thank you. Next up, Councilman Sheehy.
This was a missed opportunity of a colossal magnitude. 70 acres of land that is primed for development. And just think about the impact of what's going to happen with this property once it changes hands out of this quasi-public-private ownership of the SPA. It immediately is going to be on our tax rolls. And then think about the possibilities of this property after it's developed. The property taxes alone. Then if you've got commercial property on this area, think about the business license fees that come out of this as well, plus accommodations, if there are accommodations and hospitality taxes that come out of this, plus business license. The whole gamut of what's going to happen with this property and an impact it's going to have on our community, particularly in our economy, is enormous. And no one thought beyond that. Here was an opportunity for the city to be at the tip of the spear, to say this is our vision for developing this property, for putting it on the tax rolls, making sure that we were the voice to direct the development of this property. We didn't do that. So here we are. This is an example of lack of leadership. Here's what you should do as mayor. Sit down with the SBA and say, this is my vision for how I wanted this property to be redeveloped. And of course, incorporate the local neighborhoods, incorporate the community stakeholders who are involved in this process. But the mayor is the chief executive officer who leads the city and should have come up with a plan and say, this is the path forward that we want to use to redevelop Union Pier. And we simply just didn't do that.
Thank you. Ms. Gaston, you are up.
From the beginning, I'm just going to speak from my vantage point for one moment and then broaden it out. I felt a little bit disrespected by the process. I participated in a number of the hearing sessions, but I also sat with a group of citizens from the area that would be directly impacted by the development of Union Pier. Some of the listening sessions were held during a tropical storm event. Sometimes, you know, the input from the public wasn't taken seriously. They would collect input on post-its, but no one knew where that information went to. I felt disrespected. I felt like the process was just some sort of kabuki theater, some sort of perfunctory process where it really wasn't going to take into account what folks felt about the project. I think that whenever we dream of large-scale projects like the Union Pier, it has to start with the people. It's the public-private component of it is there, right? But we have to get back to a more democratic way of creating policy and navigating our land use policy. We have to lead with the people. And while I agree with some of what my contemporaries have shared in terms of the mayor having a strong vision and leadership, the mayor's vision is not the vision. It's your vision. And that should be at the forefront of any of the decision-making process. We have an opportunity to really do something amazing with this area, create a third place for our community, for our kids, not just another place where the wealthy, the top tier, the elite, park their wealth.
Thank you, and Ms. Gaston, you are actually the follow-up question for this section. On your website, you reference your commitment to transitioning from an extractive approach to development and planning to one that is community-driven and focused on economic diversity beyond tourism. How could that philosophy apply to the redevelopment of Union Pier?
Let's start with affordable housing. I believe the projected affordable housing for that project really missed the mark, and a lot of you already understand what affordable housing is, but from a renter's perspective, we really have to drill down and read the fine print. So sometimes when developers in the city say affordable housing, they mean you have to earn 80 to 120% of the area median income, which is $94,000, which means I probably have to earn $70,000+. I wouldn't qualify for some of that affordable housing in projects like Union Pier. I don't believe that a lot of these visions really do incorporate working class folk. And that's why that's one of the reasons why I'm running primarily, is to represent the working class folk that help, you know, help our tourism industry and help our workforce thrive. The extractive part is how we navigate TIFs, right? Our tax incremental financing. And while they're not on their face, on the surface, they're not inherently bad, they've been abused. In places like the West Side, the Horizon TIF, there's a lot of extraction going there from our school operation.
All right, thank you. We'll move on to question five. Our success as a tourism destination and desirable place to live and work can be attributed to the exceptional preservation of our historic city. Yet preservation ordinances in Charleston and around the country have been criticized as an expensive mandate and a barrier to obtainable housing. How do we balance historic preservation with the most acute challenges that Charleston faces, like equity and affordability? Mayor Tecklenburg, you are first.
So thank you. We're proud to have the country's oldest preservation ordinance, and it's helped keep Charleston what it is. But sometimes you gotta make some changes and adjustments, and we've been doing that recently. North of Lyon Street, we've been adjusting the requirements for windows, doors, roofs, to allow folks who have been homeowners for a long, long time and maybe can't afford the kinds of specifications that we in the past put on them, to loosen it up a little bit and let staff have some more flexibility. We've been doing that. I couldn't believe it when I became mayor, and after the first storm or two, that the BAR was basically turning people down who wanted to elevate their homes, you know, to get it out of the floodwaters. So we came up with guidelines to instruct people on how they could get that done in the historic district. Same thing with solar panels. People were being turned down right and left about solar panels. We have to adjust and make the changes in our BA laws that are reasonable, our BAR ordinances, that allow elevations, alternate energy, and renovations to occur without breaking the bank. In addition, on affordable housing, just to let you know, we've been cutting the red tape. We have a concierge to help affordable housing projects through the process. We've cut fees for affordable housing projects.
Thank you. Councilman Shade, you are up next.
I experienced this personally. I owned a piece of property at 89 Broad Street. It was my office for about 10 years and had an easement with the historic Charleston. And while I was hamstrung a little bit on some of the things I wanted to do with the property, I felt like I was a steward of that building and could not do violence to that building in trying to make any major changes or adjustments. It was too valuable a piece of property. Its historic fabric was important to the community. And so that's the mindset you have if you own property in the city of Charleston, particularly historic property. It's going to be expensive to own. It's going to be expensive to maintain. It's going to be expensive with your taxes that come along with it. That's a problem. And my solution was to sell it. Somebody else inherited that problem. But that's not the answer that you want. The answer that you want is, what are some of the things that we can do to tweak to make that ownership of that property a lot easier, including giving tax breaks to that homeowner as to what that property value would increase? Because my taxes on 89 Broad Street were approximately $27,000 a year. That was a heavy burden for me to have to bear on a regular basis. So you want to find other incentives and ways that you can lower the cost of maintenance of that property in order to keep it, in order to make sure that it keeps its heritage and its fabric and its cultural integrity throughout the years.
Thank you. Representative Coxwell, you are up next.
Yeah, I think, let me just say that I'm a big fan of preservation. It's a world that I've been very involved with for 20 years in my business career, renovating things like the cigar factory. And I also understand how difficult it is, and frankly, how expensive it is. And so when it comes to affordability, there's no question folks need help, particularly folks that live in these older homes. I think the Historic Charleston Foundation has done an incredible job with their revolving fund and the efforts that they've put into restoring a lot of these homes. Because, as mentioned earlier, I mean, we are our built environment. We are known for the efforts that have gone before us in protecting what makes Charleston Charleston today, and that is, again, our buildings that have been preserved for so many generations. So one idea is, again, work with the revolving fund, and I think the city can have a pretty active role in that. It doesn't need to compete with the with organizations like the foundation. I also think that if you look at gentrification, the idea of people being pushed out, a lot of times that happens because of taxes. And as I mentioned earlier, I think putting a millage cap on long-time owner-occupied residents can help solve that so that people aren't taxed out of their homes because of development happening around them. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Gammons, you are up next.
Preservation is part of who we are as Charlestonians. And our city is different, and I love that Charleston is different. Part of that difference is from our history, the good and the bad part of our history, having enslaved people, native tribes that helped build our city, and were a part of our city and still are part of our city. So finances is key, are key in order to maintain this balance, preservation and affordability. I, as mayor, as I stated earlier, will work with neighboring municipalities, with counties, with the state government, with federal government, to work for grants and incentives in order to allow people to stay in their homes, to repair their homes, that they don't have the finances to do so, to have that financial assistance for them. Public-private agreements are necessary in order to help with this preservation and also maintaining the quality of life for our citizens. And then working with with banks and lending associations, because historically we know that Black and brown people were denied loans, females were denied loans historically, so working with them to encourage loans to help people maintain their homes. And working with all of these institutions, level of government, in order to maintain who we are as Charleston, maintain our existence.
All right, thank you. Mr. Middleton, you are up.
We have to change our behaviors. We have to think with the end in mind. This is a true balance, and I think for the city of Charleston as mayor, working with not just this organization, the Charleston Foundation, but making sure that those that are impacted are part of the decision-making process, not just on the menu. But that's very important. We have to include people that are going to be, as I canvass, I say, well, that used to be there. So-and-so used to live there. We got a whole bunch of Eustas around here. And for me, it's like, well, we're going to need the International African American Museum to remind people that Black folks were here. A marker is good. It has its place. Oral history is good, and it has its place. But can we be proactive and engaging to provide the resources, to provide the rules and regulations, but get the input of those that have been displaced, those that may be displaced, to no fault of their own, of what happened. But let's include them into that decision-making process. That is how we would get a better outcome. That is how we can all be a new brick in an old foundation.
Thank you. Ms. Gadsden, you will wrap up this section. Yeah, sure. All right, our success as a tourism destination and desirable place to live and work can be attributed to the exceptional preservation of our historic city. Yet preservation ordinances in Charleston and around the country have been criticized as an expensive mandate and a barrier to obtainable housing. How do we balance historic preservation with the most acute challenges that Charleston faces, like equity and affordability?
One thing's for certain, and it's been mentioned by the incumbent, we need to really reevaluate the way we conduct business at the city level with regard to folks who have demonstrated a desire to either renovate their homes or modify their homes. I have a dear friend, her name is April McGill. She's an architect with Root Down Designs. She had a client, Mr. Don Edwards. He had a home on Poinsett Street that had been in the family for years, for generations. He had tried on multiple occasions to try to update that property, renovate that property that was almost falling down, and still currently almost falling down. It took a former mayor pro tem, it took a civil rights icon, Nelson Brown, it took a current city council person, and a whole host of other people to advocate for him at a bar presentation, to present before the bar, the BAR. It shouldn't take a Herculean effort for you to modify your home to create affordable housing, which is what he was trying to do. We need to deregulate where possible. Charleston has to come to a decision whether or not they want to be Venice, a museum that's locked into the past, or do we want to embrace a more forward way forward for people? And it doesn't mean we sacrifice the historical character. It doesn't mean that. It means that where it makes sense, we modify and we grow as a city. And we make sure that people who want to create affordable housing can do that.
All right, thank you. The follow-up question in this section is for Ms. Gammons. You've talked a lot about the importance of preservation of our city's history and culture on the campaign trail. If you were elected mayor, would you like to see the city expand its preservation oversight to areas not on the peninsula, such as African-American settlement communities or historic neighborhoods in West Ashley?
Yes, it's so important. I mentioned to this earlier that we look at all of the city of Charleston, which includes west of the Ashley, part of James Island, part of Johns Island, Daniel Island, and we include all of that. And our history, good and bad, is important. We need to know, everyone needs to know, residents and those who visit need to know what our history is. It's important to know from where we've been in order to know where we are going. And so letting them know that the good and the bad is super important. The cemeteries, making sure that they are preserved, the sacred places are preserved. There's a cemetery on Daniel Island that's preserved, and I run by there on a regular basis. And I am grateful for that. I am grateful for that part of the history of our beautiful city to maintain that and making sure we do that. And as mayor, I will work with everyone, all organizations, to do that.
All right, thank you. We'll move on to our final question of the evening. How do we balance the economic needs of the peninsula, which is the economic center of our city, with the vast majority of the voter base, which being located off the peninsula? How can the next mayor focus on the so-called goose that lays the golden egg without alienating off-peninsula residents? Mayor Tecklenburg, you were up first.
So you got to take care of the peninsula and the central business district. It's the heartbeat of not just our city, but really the whole region. That being said, we have to continue investments in other parts of our city. And I'm going to give one example, and that's our parks referendum that many of us today showed up together to support. And if you look at the $70 million we're proposing to spend at first on our parks, most of it is West Ashley, James Island, and Johns Island, honestly. There's a couple of parks on the peninsula, and we have other things happening on the peninsula, like the wonderful charitable creation of a park at 141 Meeting Street, which is happening, and the Low Line. So not that there aren't great park improvements coming downtown, but the majority of the investment for like a swimming pool, Johns Island Rec Center, will be in other parts of our city. And we also have to continue to invest in the stormwater improvements, infrastructure, West Ashley. I mentioned some of those projects already, like Windermere, the Doo-Wop area. By the way, we've created, downtown has had TIF districts to help fund infrastructure for a long time. In the last 8 years, we've created the first two TIF districts West Ashley. One runs up and down Sam Rittenberg, and the other is out in the Beach Ferry area. We today came to an agreement with the developers of Citadel Mall on the stormwater improvements there that will enable that to continue.
Thank you, Mayor. Ms. Gaston, you are up next.
I think we need to, one thing I'd like to see is for leadership in Charleston to model a little bit of courage, demonstrate a little bit of courage with regard to other economies. I think William brought it up earlier, that we, Well, Kristen, you called out the goose that lays the golden egg in the question, but we need more than geese. We need chickens, quails, anything that can lay an egg. We need it. We need to diversify our economy. And I'm a proponent of trying to figure out what that looks like. Other blue-collar cities have done it. You know, Cleveland, Ohio has had a city-led co-op where workers own a business that services, you know, some of the city operations. We can do that. We can actually create those economies, and we can sponsor those things. We just have to demonstrate the political will to do so. I just don't want Charleston to be locked into a mindset and a way of life that is just so wedded to the past that we forget that we're facing new challenges, we're embracing new communities, and we're inviting so many different and diverse voices here. We don't have to lose much of our built environment. We don't have to sacrifice our social character either. But we need to figure out new ways to diversify our economies so that everything is not reliant on tourism, especially given the impacts of the climate crisis. That makes it even more discretionary. So we need to figure out a way forward to generate revenue in new and innovative ways. And I think the next leader needs to demonstrate courage in that way.
All right, thank you. Mr. Middleton, you are up.
As mayor of the city of Charleston, I'm not going to put one part of the city against another. I'm from downtown Charleston. Both my wife and I, we live in West Ashley. My great-grandparents, my daddy, mama, and daddy are from John's Island, Water Law. I have great friends out in, my in-laws live in James Island. You know, I got it so easy to be part of the family. I have great friends that live in Daniel Island. So I'm not going to put one part of Charleston against another. We all can be one Charleston beyond it 7 times of the year that we want to hold hands. As mayor of the city of Charleston, we have to make sure that we focus on our people, our greatest asset, transportation, economy, whether it's jobs, whether it is housing. All of those things go around the city. It's not just landlocked in one particular area. So it goes back to how we're planning, how are we have the right lines of effort in place and alignment on those activities. We have to collaborate and communicate so that all parts of our city, which have different needs at different times, making sure that we are proactive in addressing them, working with council and their respective districts, working with the various neighborhood associations as well. So I believe we cannot put ourselves against each other. And as mayor of the city of Charleston, that would be very much a focal point, that we can coexist together and truly be each other's brother and sister's keeper, regardless of what part of the city you live in.
Thank you. Next up, we have Representative Cogswell.
Well, I agree with Clay. The mayor of Charleston needs to be the mayor of the entire city. And I agree with Mika that we need more chickens. Except for maybe the Ohio part. But in all seriousness, it is important that the peninsula remain a living city. Mika mentioned Venice, and that's an example that's been used before. It's important to have, again, a living city on our peninsula and have families that can come there, because that's what people love about Charleston. They love the fact that people live downtown, and it is a living and breathing city. And so that is why we have the goose that lays the golden egg, so to speak. But we also can't ignore the rest of Charleston. I mean, Mayor mentioned the two TIP districts over in West Ashley, and those are ripe opportunities for redevelopment that have been dormant for 7 years. 7 years. And, you know, if you want to make West Ashley less mad at the peninsula, well, work on some of those opportunities over there and work diligently. Because, you know, that helps bring everybody together. You also have issues on John's Island, James Island, in terms of traffic. And so what you have over there, this is hard.
Thank you. Next up, Councilman Shade.
I'm not going to talk about chickens, I promise you that. West Ashley has not been dormant for 7 years. It's been dormant for 70 years. It's been a huge problem over there. When you look at the balance of power, what's going on in the city of Charleston, we're doing something terribly wrong. because the city's population on the peninsula is dwindling. And just recently, we had to do a redistricting, and the peninsula lost another city council representative. They're down to three. The majority of city council representatives are on West Ashley. And if West Ashley was a city of its own, it'd be the fifth largest city in the state of South Carolina. So the population is trending towards West Ashley, and then Daniel Island, and Johns Island, and some, to some extent, James Island as well. We've got to reverse the trend, because you need permanent residents on the peninsula. And as soon as you start thinking in that mode, it's going to change the complexity and the culture of what we're talking about right now. But at the same time, you need to make sure that as you're redeveloping West Ashley, and you just follow Plan West Ashley, it's a wonderful plan, if you just follow Plan West Ashley, you can include the diversity that is calling for, including more commercial components into that plan. And you need to do the same thing on Johns Island and the same thing on Daniel Island. You can't make these outlying areas just residential communities. That is the death of those communities. And you need to make sure that you diversify all these communities until you have this wonderful balance of commercial and residential together.
All right, thank you. Ms. Gammons, you are up.
It's important to remember that we are all connected. All of the city of Charleston, I mentioned to you earlier the different areas, and as your mayor, I will represent all those different areas. I will have a mayor's advisory task committee for representatives and volunteers from all the different areas, Johns Island, James Island, Daniel Island, west of the Ashley, the peninsula. And these volunteers will help assess what is needed in that particular area. And also the need for this understanding of education. We have all these colleges and medical university here, and using that as a means of finding out what else can we do in order to generate income for our beautiful city. Our high school students, working with them with these for these innovative ideas, and also supporting entrepreneurs. Doing all of that in order to engage everyone, and I will be your voice. I will be the mayor of the people, engaging everyone in order to bring the economy to this area, and along with this comprehensive plan, including all of the different areas that make up the city of Charleston, that comprehensive plan includes listening to everyone and getting your ideas in order that our city maintains its beauty, its charm, and its hospitality.
All right, thank you. The follow-up question for this section is for Mayor Tecklenburg. How will you formulate and advance your vision for the future of our city, utilizing the 1-2 punch of the forthcoming new peninsula plan and overhaul of the city's zoning code?
Give me that again.
Sure.
1-2 punch.
How will you formulate and advance your vision for the future of our city, utilizing the upcoming 1-2 punch of the forthcoming new peninsula plan and overhaul of the city's zoning codes?
So those are happening right now at the same time, y'all. The peninsula plan, our downtown plan, hasn't been looked at in a number of years, and we're doing that right now. So please be engaged with that. It includes some of these topics we're talking about, like tourism management, Union Pier, flooding and drainage improvements. So I ask everybody to be involved in that. And the second part was?
The city zoning codes.
The new zoning codes. So I mentioned already to you that we'll be one of the first cities to have elevation-based zoning. On the peninsula, there's not too many places under 6 feet of elevation above mean sea level, but there's a few. So that will be some impact from a density point of view. But we'll also be addressing affordability in that zoning rewrite. Things like how we allow accessory dwelling units, other zoning incentives for people.
Thank you. All right, next up is our closing statements, which again are in a random order. The candidates will have 2 minutes. They can speak to whatever they would like, whether it's just a general closing statement, respond or expound on anything that we talked about tonight. First up is Mr. Middleton.
Thank you all for this opportunity. There are no
shortage of issues that are facing us as a city. I just believe we need a better shared vision and bold servant leadership in City Hall in order to meet the challenges and opportunities that exist. I'm 41 years old. I remember at the age of 10 or 11, my mother was picking me up from my grandmother's home a few doors down. It must have been a bad day for her because we stopped right here on John and Meeting Street. And I'm like, you know, you can turn right on Gray. And she said to me, son, while you are sleeping, they're thinking, they're working. I did not know what she meant then, but over the years, I figured it out. That you have to, if you believe in something, you have to work hard at it. You have to work with people. You have to collaborate. You have to do whatever it takes to make sure that you do not leave anyone behind. And then when I joined the military, I learned that's part of soldier's freedom, not leaving any neighborhood, community, or resident behind, not leaving a fallen comrade behind. Again, there are no shortage of issues. We just have to elevate our way of thinking and not settle for minimal standards and thinking that minimum standards are works of excellence when they are not. As mayor of the city of Charleston, my plan, my shared vision, I would do everything in my power to create a Charleston that works for everyone, to create a Charleston that is more affordable, more accessible, and more livable for all, not just one part of our city and not another. That equity and all the issues that we laid out today are embedded not only in our ordinances, but in our daily practices. So I thank you again for this time. I hope to earn your support. You can go to claymiddleton.com where I outline very specifically what I would do and what we can accomplish together. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Councilman Shade.
Thank you for the opportunity to be a candidate for mayor for this wonderful city. I remember back in 1980, in the debate between then President Carter and then Governor Reagan, that Ronald Reagan ended it by saying, "Are you better off now than you were 4 years ago?" And that's the question you need to ask yourself today. Are we better off now than we were 8 years ago or 4 years ago? The issues before us today that are facing the city of Charleston can be grouped into one question: livability. Is our standard of living better now than it was? Do we feel safer now than we did 4 years ago or 8 years ago? Do we feel like we're losing our charm and the things and the characters that make Charleston, Charleston? How do you answer that question? If you're comfortable with that, then re-elect this man to my left. Re-elect John Tecklenburg. Give him another 4 years, and he's announced that this is going to be his last 4 years in office. He'll be a lame duck mayor. If you're happy with that direction, re-elect him. The question isn't what the issues are. We know what the issues are. The issues are affordability for housing, managing stormwater and flooding issues, public safety, and overdevelopment. Now, who on this stage is going to answer those questions for you? Who on this stage is going to give you the vision and leadership that you need to answer those questions? Look at the experience that we may have collectively or individually. Look at my service as 8 years on City Council and the things I've been able to accomplish to make this city better for you, not just for the citizens of West Ashley, but for the entire city completely. And look at my experience. I've been 40 years as an advocate to promote ideas and suggestions to make this city a much better place for all of us to live. Leadership is the ability to articulate your vision. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Representative Coxwell.
Well, thank you again for having us tonight. Enjoyed the opportunity to speak with you all. I want to use my first minute to just do a public service announcement and beg everybody here to vote. But early voting has started today. The election is 2 weeks from tomorrow. So please go out and vote. I assume by you being here, you probably will be voting, but I'm going to ask you to be annoying and tell all your friends to vote. Because, ladies and gentlemen, out of a city of about 165,000 people in the last mayoral election, only 22,000 people voted. So we need people to show up at the polls. This is your opportunity to express if you've been happy with the current state of affairs. And Councilman Shade stole some of my lines, but bottom line is 8 years is a long time.
8 years is a long time, especially having gone through one of the biggest economic booms that our city and our country's ever been through. And ask yourself, are we better off? Are we better off with traffic? Are we better off with affordability? Are we better off with development? Are we better off with flooding? My answer is no, and that is why I'm in the race. That's why all of us are in the race. I think it is time for a change. I think it's time, frankly, for my generation to step up. I think we need leadership. I think we need vision. I think we need somebody that has a proactive approach to actually getting things done. And I have that experience in both the public and private sector to lead our city forward. So I would appreciate your vote, but please make sure you go out and cast the ballot. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Ms. Gaston.
I'm going to make an assumption. I hope it's a safe assumption. If you're in this room, you're probably passionate about this city's history and the stories that this city tells. Typically, I would introduce myself as the daughter of two Jim Crow refugees. Both my parents are from the Jim Crow South, my father from Wadmalaw, my mother from Eastern North Carolina. And they left the Jim Crow South, and they met in New Jersey, where I was born. I am what you call a Cumya-Binyer hybrid. I graduated from Charleston County, a public school, St. Andrew's High School, Go Rocks. That's a little bit of my story, and I think it matters. But there was a story that I was presented with this weekend. Yesterday, as I was canvassing and knocking doors, I met a young lady. Her name was Colleen. This is a true story. I was with my volunteer, Megan, who is a manager at Husk. And Colleen opened the door. She was blurry-eyed. She was crying because she just was presented with another rent increase. And as a renter, that really hit home for me. My rent went up $400 last year. That's a lot. That's a lot. This was a mother of two. And she literally was finishing crying because she didn't know what to do. She called her mother. And we had this long conversation, myself, my volunteer, Megan, and Colleen. She lives on James Island, and she's managing multiple jobs, working in catering, helping folks with addiction. And she can't afford to live on James Island. Is that the story we want to tell as a city? A story of just having housing that's inaccessible, a story of displacement, a story of the haves and have-nots. We need to tell richer and fuller stories, and they need to incorporate everybody here. It's really important that you hear from working class people like myself. And I really do hope that you consider me as a candidate. You can visit votebeacon.com to learn more about me, or you can Google me. There's some interesting things out there. Okay. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mayor Tecklenburg. You are up now.
Thank you for having us this evening, and thank you all for the opportunity to serve as mayor for the last 8 years. I really love my job, helping people every day. I feel like I'm a caring person, and I also am positive and a problem solver, and I think you can see that in a lot of the areas that we've talked about tonight. I want to quickly, we ran out of time on all those things, so let me catch up on a couple things. On paying the fair share, I did want to let y'all know we're going to adjust the hotel business license fee about double, so hotels will pay a much bigger share of that they should be. Regarding the flooding and sea level rise, I could spend all night. Please just go to the website and check out our flooding and sea level rise strategies. You'll see all the projects, all the strategies out there. It's the most comprehensive of any city in America. It's really amazing. And part of that is because I really try to hire the best people. Dale Morris, he's incredible. He's our chief resiliency officer. Matt Fountain, he's the head of the stormwater department. Everybody gives these guys accolades. We've got a great team in the city of Charleston. We hired my dear friend, Chief Luther Reynolds, and now Chief Cheeto Walker, to keep us safe. We have an incredible team of employees at the city of Charleston, and it's an honor to work with them as well. So every day, you're right, there's so many issues that we face, but I gotta tell you, I look at the schedule, all these requests. If I'm doing one of these three things every day, I feel good about my schedule. Public safety is number one. We've increased funding for our police and fire department. They have the best training. in the state. They're just incredible. Our men in blue were 100% staffed at our fire department. Flooding and sea level rise, we talked about that tonight. Please look at the website as I ask you to. Affordable housing, we didn't talk about that tonight. The city of Charlton is doing more than any other.
Thank you. Ms. Gammons, the floor is yours.
I love our city. I love the city of Charleston. I grew up with my mom and my grandmother, and I stand on their shoulders, along with Lucille Whipper and Septima Clark, the Grimke sisters, all of those who helped build Charleston and build this area. And I am so proud of that. My grandmother, my mom, all of their family growing up here grew up during segregation. And I learned from them the importance of being strong, being confident, and seeing everyone. And that's what I will do as mayor. Seeing everyone, representing you, being the mayor of the people, that's what I will do. Inviting everyone to the table and listening to them. You can invite people in, but if you don't listen, if you don't work with them, it's to no good. So I will do that. I have the energy, the enthusiasm, the experience in order to be the fantastic mayor for the city of Charleston, keeping in mind our history, again, good and bad that we have, preserving what we have. I just spoke with somebody who's knows or has family in Jupiter, Florida, and he said that Jupiter was kind of sort of like Charleston, and people kept coming and development kept going on, and now it's horrible. I do not want that to happen in Charleston. You guys don't want that to happen. I will make sure it doesn't happen, that we maintain our quality of life here in Charleston. People come because of our rivers, our marshes, our creeks, our trees, our homes, our buildings, our charm, our southern hospitality. And I will maintain that as your mayor. I will represent everyone. I love our city. And I am so proud of my mom and my grandmother for bringing me up. I will work with all the schools that I'm doing now. I'm an attorney. I am a law professor. I work with laws, and I will continue to do that for you.
All right. Thank you. And thank you to all the candidates for their insight into the pressing issues of our city today and for being with us tonight. Thank you to the Historic Charleston Foundation for hosting this and allowing me to moderate. I'm honored to have been here. Also, reminder for everyone, Election Day, Tuesday, November.